Good afternoon. My name is Wendy Machika. I am commissioning editor at Jonathan Ball Publishers, and we are doing one of the last sessions at our roundtable with PageCast. I'm sitting with Khaya Dlanga and Usia Khumalo, and we're just going to talk about how the day's been and what they're looking forward to and everything else around festival and festival seasons. How are you guys doing?
Good. I'm very hungry. I'm going to start off with how hungry I am. Oh my God.
I was just a starving artist.
Everybody's
hungry. But due to bad planning.
Me too.
I was going to say that there's a lot of food at Kingsmead and it's lovely stuff.
Yeah, because it just arrived. So I didn't even.
They're feeding the authors.
They are feeding the authors. I promise we feed the authors.
Like everywhere you turn, there's food for authors. But what have we been doing?
I just arrived. I've had a very busy day.
So both of you are not first-time authors and have done the festival circuit for some time now. Mm-hmm. Unfair question. Mm-hmm. Which of the festivals is your favorite festival?
Would you like to answer first? I think I'm gonna take the romance out of writing and festival circuitry and all of this stuff. At the end of the day, it's a job, and you have to take each festival and make the absolute best of it on its own terms. If you're thinking of it as a consumer and you're thinking, which way am I gonna get the nicest this or the best that, like then you're missing out on how you can engage with it to make it work. So just heads up, if you are, whoever's listening, if you are a writer or an aspiring writer, wherever you are in that value chain, you do have to think of each. I mean, we are not doing the best job of it because we're not thinking about our meal stops and everything else, but you really have to plan how to manage your own emotions so that, because people pick up whether you're happy or not on stage. Mm. Yeah. They pick up on your energy.
Very diplomatic answer.
Very diplomatic.
Personally, I think I tend to struggle with festivals, right? It's there's a part of me that feels like I don't belong.
Really?
Right? Yeah. So I always feel like a bit of an outsider.
Book three in.
You see, I promise, even more. Do you know what it is? It's because you go in there and then these writers are talking about, you know, writer stuff.
You say the writer.
No,
what is writer
but
stuff?
I just don't feel like I'm in the club in a strange way. And I think, the only time I really do maybe enjoy myself is when I'm just talking to people about just other stuff and not about the fact that, okay, hey, we're all authors and writers here. And now when we're talking about the festivals that I can tell are my least favorite. I haven't been to many festivals, number one. I think I've just been to the major ones, like Kingsmead, Open Book Fair. I've been there once. Franschhoek, maybe three times. There's one that I am not. It felt like a waste of time. Am I allowed to say this?
You are.
Time of the Writer in Durban, just a few weeks ago. And I was like, what? There was like, I don't know what it is about that festival. Just that did not feel like a festival. It felt like, you know, it was like a bunch of friends that were brought in and you get into the room. I suppose when you go to a festival, you expect to have like a large number of people. I think in that room, it's such a small room, maybe it's about this size and maybe like 15, 20 people, I don't know. And that's it.
Yeah, but festivals have time to grow and develop.
No,
and
apparently
change,
that one's been around for a very long time.
Okay.
It's been around for a very long time.
It has though.
Okay.
Yeah, so they have no excuse. They really don't have an excuse to be what they are because you're flying so many people there, writers, mm-hmm. and you get there and literally, and it almost feels like half the audience are other writers rather than, you know, people
engaging
from
with
the
your
city
audience,
and go engaging about or around books. And what I found also, like, I was perturbed by the fact that, like, it's the university as well that's involved. And then I'm not seeing any people from the university, like students, and, you know, and I don't know if it's a publicity factor. I don't know what it is, but that one, that I did not like. And I like those. They had the Midlands one. That was a Midlands something. Actually, when they, I went there once. I really enjoyed that. That was nice. And there was, so I, all the ones that I've mentioned, I do enjoy when I go to them. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Has there been for you, Sia, a place where the reception of either of your books has elicited like a very surprising response? What has been the most surprising responses you've had from your writing or any of your books?
Surprising good or surprising bad?
Either way. Either way, or tell us both.
That's a fair question. So I was in Berlin for at the Berlin, so it's called the Berlin Book Fair last year. And my first book is titled You Have to Be Gay to Know God. The second one is The Queer Book of Revelation. So they, somebody had the bright idea. And I think it was such a good idea on paper to have, they decided, let's have a discussion about, Jesus and whiteness and colonialism and everything else. And they put me on that panel discussion. And they instead of the discussion taking off and being about religion and coloniality and all of those things, it became, why do you believe in God as a gay man? And so that's a thing that comes up in all the discussions, but it's never come up to the extent that it did at that whole, at that festival as a whole and in that discussion in particular. So for me, I felt, because when I have the same discussion, if I can invite it, for an example, to a space that is maybe religious, so they're always like, okay, let's hear your story. Let's hear your perspective. And they hear me out. And there's never a verdict of, okay, we think your thinking makes sense. You're right or you're wrong. It's like, we just wanted to hear.
Yeah.
There's an openness. But in progressive and secular and some literary spaces, it's like, but why?
Yeah, you must reach a resolution of the debate or the...
Yeah, it's like, but why are you even in the debate? Like, are you not sabotaging the entire movement for human rights? And so that, yeah, in that particular festival, in that particular discussion, I'm not saying it's a bad festival. I think every festival has things that go right and things that go wrong. Again, that very diplomatic position of mind that you need to manage everything. But it was the one place where the reception, we didn't even get around to discussing the books in that particular panel discussion. It just, everybody gets stuck on why is, I mean, by the same token, I was on a panel in Franschhoek. It was about sex. And they thought, yeah, let's put Sia Khumalo on it because I write about religion, politics, sex, and technology. And one of the panelists noticed that because I speak from the books that I've written, she noticed that I speak about sexuality and religion. And so I'm walking around outside. I bump into her. I didn't even remember who she was. This is so bad. I mean, I recognized her face. I'd looked her up. I'd looked at her work, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm walking around. And the first thing she asks me about, she's like, she tells me, I'm atheist. Why do you have this position? Especially as a queer black man, blah, blah, blah. Again, surprisingly open-minded, was able to wrestle with my position. But I 20 years ago, faith was such a big part of so many people's lives. Now it's like, but why?
Yeah, I think we've, and maybe it's the age that we're in, that we are living in a very polarized
yes, we are.
Situation. So going from the title of your book, when is the last time you said life be like that sometimes and what was happening?
I mean, it's like, I suppose it was fairly recently, actually, pretty recently. And I think it's, I had a very difficult, almost like 2 years. And then like in almost any way you can possibly think. And then literally over the last few months, like a series of like very, very good things happened, like one after the other, like, my class and I maybe I just said as a joke, and I was like, you know, and I was talking about like how things can, it can seem like they're conspiring to You could tell yourself they're conspiring to work against you or something like that. And it feels like, because like it seems like it's one thing after another after another. But then what can also happen is that like it can be a series of like amazing things that there's, you know, on the flip end side of things. And I guess life is like that sometimes. Yeah. Maybe that's what that's what I'd say. Yeah.
Mm. We were talking about earlier how polarized sort of the world has become, right? And I don't know if it's still, I feel like your answer before maybe led to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what's the most controversial, like, opinion you think that you hold or seemingly hold now in terms of how people react to it? Don't say the title of your last book.
So, again, when you write about religion, politics, sex, and technology, anything you say in that context, you can say men and women are equal. Ah, now you have a fight about the definition of the word equality. Because in Christian circles, for an example, they will be like, no, equal but different. Well, these are this is what it means to be masculine or feminine. Like they'll have those words. And so my sexual and gender fluidity worldview will come and seem very surprising to them. I remember I went to a church in Durban, and I had a copy of my first book on You Have to Be Gay to Know God. I happened to lift it out and hand it to a gentleman. He looked like he thought he was going to get struck by lightning.
Right there and then.
And in my head, this is just, I was having a conversation with somebody about gender fluidity the other day. It's not controversial. It's not anything. You know, like, it's just normal. Or another one that I've had, when I first started pitching the Queer Book of Revelation, I was saying technology companies are going to take over governments. And it's part of a cycle and a pattern we've been seeing throughout history. This was back in 2018, 19 that I started thinking along these lines. And at the time, it just seemed so remote. Like that is
so far-fetched.
So far-fetched.
And here we are.
And at the time, we were like, yes, what you're saying, the patterns you're drawing out are there. Maybe let's do a science fiction novel. And that's how the Queer Book of Revelation became a science fiction novel. And now here we are. For me, it was just the thing that was happening. It was the idea that people will give away their democratic rights to companies and businesses. I say that for me, it's just Tuesday. For the next person, it's controversial.
I suppose that's also maybe the thing about being writers and thinkers, right? Mm. That maybe, and maybe let me ask the question rather, how does your research look like if you do research, right?
Mm.
And what's been the strangest piece of research item, if I can call it that, that you found that has influenced your work?
So, we're off paper. I wake up in the morning and it's such a bad habit. I just switch on the news. It is such a bad habit because the first thing you hear is negativity. It's downhill from there. But as you listen to the news, a lot of the analysis is going to have, there's going to be meta-analysis. Somebody will say, this is happening today, 25 years ago, something like this happened. And so people are always, a lot of journalists will always be connecting the dots according to their particular worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And the most controversial source of worldviews and that kind of connecting the dots that I get is from sermons.
Mm.
I listen to far more sermons than any normal person should. And by the time MAGA, Make America Great Again, by the time they come out with, for an example, climate change is a hoax, I know which interpretation of which Bible texts they took, or rather the oil lobby took, to convince Christians that saving the planet is a pagan idea.
Mm.
They believe this. We're meant, it's going to burn anyway. By the time it really burns, it'll have nothing to do with the fact that you've been running your engine too long. So you might as well just drill, baby, drill.
Mm.
So by the time Donald Trump is saying that, I've been listening to the sermons. I've been following which worldviews are being shaped. I know which lobbies. I mean, like, today, if you go to most churches and you say in Israel and Palestine, who are they listening to? Who's influencing them? Because the word Israel shows up in the Bible, I don't know how many times. By the time that lobby has its foothold, I know which sermons develop which worldview. Where did we get the idea? Where did churches get the idea that black people didn't have souls to justify slavery? It was in their churches.
So you check the what informs the propaganda.
The propaganda gets its best expression in churches.
Mm.
So I have to read sermons. I have to read what people are saying from pulpits. Whether I agree with some of it, like I have to read it and I have to know which Bible verses they're using. I have to know the context of those Bible verses. I'm like, now you're just preaching an agenda.
Okay.
Disguised as theology.
And for you, Kay?
I don't know if I, because I write about myself, so I don't know if I do a lot of research, except I will ask, you know, people if they have the same memories, do they remember these things? So I'll do those kinds of things where, in this latest book, I spoke, quite a number of chapters actually are things that my mom wrote and sent me.
Ah.
So I'd asked her, because I said that I think she needs to write. And she was like, nah. But she wanted to tell me these stories, but she would write them in isiXhosa and send them on WhatsApp. And then I said, actually, why don't you just send them on email? And then she started sending them on email. And in a way, that was her way of trying to preserve her experiences growing up in rural Eastern Cape, you know, in her era. So I think that's what was happening when I say that. And then I think maybe, like, you know, to kind of talk about the controversial, I wouldn't say take, for me it's not controversial, and as more maybe left field mine, was that, like, when you meet somebody, I don't believe that, like, I don't think we should say, like, oh, nice to meet you. That's presumptuous.
Yeah, I don't know you from above,
so
we just met.
We just met, and it's nice. I don't know. You haven't said anything. It could be, I hope it's interesting to meet you. Or I hope it will be nice to meet you. And people will say, like, yeah, but that's rude. But I'm like, but I can't say it's nice.
A good one I've heard is, yeah, I look forward to getting to know you.
It's not, yeah. I look forward, okay.
Mm.
But no, but the thing is how...
That's also presumptuous.
Yeah, because you don't know. You're like, oh my God, thank God. By the time you... down with the conversation, you're like, I don't want to meet that person ever again, right? So, but when I think about it, like in our languages, like isiXhosa and all of that, we don't have that expression.
Mm.
So when you meet someone, I'm fine, and that's it. Or on the corner, I'm here, which means I'm here, and that's it, right? So there is no expectation that you are imposing on the person that you're meeting or on yourself. It's just like, okay, all you're saying is, I'm just here.
It's interesting how much is carried in language, actually.
Right?
Yeah. It frames things in, like, a certain way.
It's interesting because we really don't, like, it's not me, because I think, like, when you say nice to meet, it's meaningless, right? It's become part, it's like, hi.
It's a soundbite.
Yeah, it's a soundbite. It doesn't mean anything. But I do feel that because I do think about it, and it's like, but is it really nice? Is it really going to be nice to meet this person?
Okay, two last questions.
Yeah.
For you, is English the best language of expression for you?
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is unfortunate is because, you know, because when I went, you know, to the white school that I went to back then, just still a white school, we had isiXhosa, right, as well, but it was a third language. And what they taught you is like, umnyango, umtango, ipen, imoto. And I was like, I mean, I speak isiXhosa, and there's no need for me to learn this because it's actually a waste of my brain. Because when we're writing our exams, I would literally, in 15 minutes, it's an hour, okay? 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I'm done and I get 100%. So what is the point?
Mm.
So, and the consequence of that was then I was unable to, so I did not learn isiXhosa as deeply as I possibly could have at the time. So I'm not as expressive as I would like to be in it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And for you, Sia, many writers struggle to settle into their voice, or to find their voice, as they say, right? Did you ever struggle with that?
So,
do you think we've met or caught up with your voice?
Yeah, so there's the perfectionism trap, in trying to find your voice or do this. So one of the things I always tell people who want to write something is record yourself speaking about it and then transcribe that. It's quick. It's dirty. Mm. We're aiming at getting it done, not getting it perfect. There'll be plenty of time to fix it down the line, but don't get too caught up.
That's
what I always say on finding your voice. You really will fix it down the line.
Thank you so much for having a chat with me.
Thank you. Thank you.
I hope you enjoy your panels. You both are on just now, né?
Yes.
I hope you enjoy those.
Yeah.
And yeah, lovely talking to you.
Yeah, great tech.
Thank you.
It was nice to meet you.
Thank you.